Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 32 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and happy Valentine's Day to everybody. And I decided for Valentine's Day I was going to bring the perfect guests on the show to be able to talk about, you know, Valentine's Day and the way that Harry and Sally deal with it and stuff like that. So I decided to bring back the Midnight Boys. So welcome back, Duff, Joe, and Rob.
Thank you.
Yeah. The kings of romance right here.
Oh, I mean, listen, we did Titanic Minute, so we know what you need to do so you don't leave your date out in the cold. You know what I mean?
It's true. It's
very true. We did do one of the most romantic movies.
Yeah, we did. So we are ready. We're the right people.
Oh, we should have invited your friend to come. You know, the dating guru.
Oh, what's the relationship expert. Yes.
Yeah.
What's his name, Jamie?
Yeah. Jamie, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. See, I remember. There you go.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I get that name right, and it's a good thing
I nailed it.
I remembered impressive. It. There you go.
I'll see him
there
in a few days. I'll be sure to let him know that he got mentioned and remembered.
There you go. There you go. He's getting a shout out. There you go.
Yep.
All right, well, minute 32 begins with Sally continuing to explain her situation and her life, and ends with Sally's tale getting even deeper. So yesterday we left things off with Sally starting to explain what happened between her and Joe. And she started saying, we wanted to live together, but we didn't want to get married. Because every time anyone we knew got married, it ruined their relationship. They practically never had sex again. It's true. It's one of those secrets that no one ever tells you. I would sit around with my girlfriends who have kids. Actually, my one girlfriend who has kids, Alice. And she would complain about how she and Gary never did it anymore. She didn't even complain about it, now that I think about it. She just said it matter-of-factly. She said, they were up all night, they were both exhausted all the time, the kids just took every sexual impulse they had out of them. Joe and I used to talk about it, and we'd say, we're so lucky. We have this wonderful relationship. We can have sex on the kitchen floor and not worry about the kids walking in. We can fly off to Rome on a moment's notice. And then one day, I was taking Alice's little girl for the afternoon because I promised I'd take her to the circus. And we're in a cab playing I Spy. I Spy a mailbox. I Spy a lamppost. So, again, a very dialogue-heavy minute. And not just that. You know, Sally is basically talking for this entire minute. We don't hear Harry at all. We see some of his reactions, you know, of how he responds to what she's saying. But he doesn't say anything here. So, first of all, I think that Sally delivers, or Meg Ryan delivers this monologue really well. Right. Yeah. On the commentary, Rob Reiner says that this is his favorite scene that she's in because he thinks she just nailed it. You know, she gives us all the emotion of this whole story of what she's telling us.
Yeah, I mean, she's really, really good in this whole movie, but in this scene too. She, you know, I think as many people, many women do in Hollywood get written off if they're good looking, but she's a really good actress.
Yeah, it's true.
It's also like little things she does with like her hand, with like pulling on her ear,
and like, she like little... moves her hand through her moves her hair over her ear and stuff like that while she's doing it.
She like pulls her ear down a little bit at one point when she's talking about it. It's a very good performance of that that monologue.
And at some points when she's talking about it, you can see that she's somewhat sad about what she's saying. You know, that she could even be on the verge of having tears in her eyes, you know, that she's remembering, you know, this very hurtful experience that she had. But I mean, it goes back to the question, you know, she barely knows Harry and she's telling him all these intimate details about her life.
Doesn't that make it easier though?
I don't know. Why would she start talking about the fact that, you know, they could have sex on the kitchen floor? You know, it just doesn't sound like something that you would, I mean, we talked a little bit yesterday about the fact that she obviously is attracted to Harry, but I don't know if that's the type of conversation that someone is going to just normally have. You want to be a little more personal.
I mean, I think it's, you know, if you're not embarrassed about having sexual urges, which I mean, I think you're right in like in the parlance of 80s movies, like
right.
women were not supposed to talk like frankly and intelligently about sex. Like you either, you know, if they did, they're usually like a nymphomaniac and comedy in like more broader comedies or something like that. Whereas here it's just, it's a very You know, it's just a
matter of fact.
It's matter of fact. It's an observation. It's, you know, it's not designed to be titillating. It's just, oh, this is a drag, and just, you know, she's adult enough to, you know, like treating, you know, the audience is seeing that, oh, I'm an adult woman and sex is an important part of relationships and it's a drag. This happens.
Right. But I'm not just talking about her saying it to the audience. I'm saying she's saying this to Harry. You know, she knows that Harry wants her.
Yeah. I do think there's something to what Rob said, that it's easier when it's a stranger or a lesser acquaintance.
An acquaintance, right? Because otherwise, like, think of earlier when she's with her friends and she's talking about stuff and they're like, oh, get the Rolodex out. Let me solve it for you. Let me fix it for you.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be fixed. She doesn't want this to be solved or fixed right now. She just went through a breakup. She's seen this person that she's remembered. They know each other. They had, I mean, the conversations they had were intimate during that 18 hours. Even though that was, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And then I also think there's something about, like, they're both just went through a breakup.
Misery loves company.
Yeah.
And so just like having someone to, like, yeah, as you said, Duff, misery loves company, and someone else to, like, be like, this is how I was feeling. And Harry's not, nothing about any the conversation in the bookstore or this, does Harry come off as, like, you know, a threat? You mentioned earlier, like, when he was younger, he was kind of prowling around or whatever. It's not doing that here at all. He's just listening.
Because he's also hurt.
Yeah.
You know, he still wants his wife back. You know, he still wants Helen back. I don't know why, but he still wants Helen back.
And so I think it is strange, like, that timing of everything would work out this way, that they'd run into each other and they just would write all that, which is, you mentioned, was in the shooting script that wasn't in the actual dialogue earlier. But I don't know, for me, like, a personal standpoint, I could understand if I was Sally in this situation and seeing someone who I knew but not knew super well, that would in a weird way be the person you do want to talk to about this.
And it's someone outside of your orbit where it's like, oh,
they're not
going to
keep bringing it up.
Yeah, like, yeah, maybe I'm never going to see this person again. They're not going to talk to my family or friends or whatever.
Right. This is
right. But again, she should still remember who Harry was. You know, both times that she's met Harry in the past, obviously he has apparently changed in the last 5 years. But the first two times that she met him, you know, he's making, you know, comments about sex. You know, he's not, you know, and he's not doing it in a nonchalant way.
No, that's true.
You know, so if she does remember who he is, then she would theoretically say, okay, wait a second, why am I telling, unless she's telling him this because she is trying to open the door.
I mean, I think subconsciously she might be doing that, but I also think that she's, you know, this is like a unique situation. This is someone who she has, like, sex has been talked about with him in the past before, and all the other reasons we listed, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, to me too. I mean, you know, I do agree there might be some subconscious urge there, but I don't think she, you know, at least consciously, she's not seducing him.
Right. No, not a question of seducing him, but she's also, she's in a hurt place, and she's, you know, maybe is trying to open the door here. I don't know.
And also, like, the whole point, to some extent, of their relationship is that they can be their real selves around that person. Like, their friendships are based off that, when that kind of blossoms from this, that they can just be the unvarnished real version of who they are when they're with each other. And that's, like, that's why they, you know, are best friends.
Right. They mesh really well, for sure.
Yeah.
No, but I'm talking about more from the perspective that, you know, she's not reached that point yet in their conversation. I mean, again, we don't know how long they've been sitting and talking. You know, that right, we're not sure. It's possible they've been sitting in this cafe for hours. Who knows?
Sure.
It's obvious that, you know, they were talking long enough in the bookstore that they decided, hey, you want to go get coffee or a drink or whatever.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Which makes you wonder which of them suggested it.
Yeah.
You know, because later on in this week, we'll see that she's the one who actually, you know, invites him out to dinner later.
Yeah, I think it'd be her. I think it'd be her who would ask.
I think Harry would be too depressed to put that forward at this
point.
To be
rejected again.
Yeah.
It could be. It's very possible. So, I mean, she also mentions about her friends Alice and Gary, right? So do any of you know where, like, what the meaning of the name Alice is?
No.
Mm-mm. You know, names all obviously come from somewhere. There's the etymology of names, you know, so everything means something or whatever. So Alice actually
Bob
means...
and Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. Is that the name of that movie?
Yeah, there is a movie called that. I've seen it. It's very strange. You know, it's not something I would have expected Natalie Wood to be in. You know, or Elliot Gould, I think, was in it. Yeah, and Robert Wagner? I don't remember. I saw it a few years ago.
Not in the movie.
It's a very strange title and a strange movie. It's basically all about, swimming.
I haven't seen it. I just know it's about, like, wife swapping, but it's kind of like a weird, like, counterculture comedy drama.
Yeah. I saw it years ago. It wasn't something that I remember, you know, so well that I would, you know, go back and revisit it either. You know, so the name Alice actually means noble. There's been a resurgence of the name over the last few years. It's now in the top 100 most popular names for baby girls, which for many years it was out of that. In 2015 in England, it was actually the 24th most popular name. But then the numbers actually, went up even higher, largely because of the Twilight books by Stephanie Meyer.
Oh, okay.
And it has appeared in numerous countries. It's now among the top 10 names, you know, because of that.
Trainer, who's Alice in the Twilight books? She's not, is that she the Kirsten Stewart character?
I honestly don't even remember.
I saw like one.
Those were not very memorable to me either. You know,
I saw one, maybe two of those movies, and don't remember anything, except when they play vampire baseball.
Yeah, no, I don't know. That's I'm sure someone's screaming at their podcast right, you know, at their iPod right now, screaming that.
Oh, I'm sure. Okay. I'm sure.
So Alice Cullen is one of the vampire characters in the Twilight novels. I don't think that Alice is the main character, though, if I remember correctly.
I do remember now. Edward Cullen is the Pattinson vampire. So
apparently it's like her sister or something like
that. She's one of the baseball playing vampires, I guess.
Okay. That's fair. Okay, and what about the name Gary? Do either one of you, any of you have an idea?
It's the name of SpongeBob SquarePants, the snail.
Ooh, there you go. That's one.
It's a city in Indiana.
Yes.
Ron Howard sang a song about it in Music Man.
That he did. Gary, Indiana, not Louisiana. Okay, Paris or France, right? Something like that, if I remember correctly.
So I remember the melody, but that's Gary, Indiana.
Yes. So Gary actually comes from the Norman French, and it either means spear, pike, javelin, or kingly and royal. I have absolutely no idea why someone would name their child that based on those, you know, terminologies.
That's more fierce than I would have suspected for Gary.
Yes, me too. Gary sounds more like a Sheldon, right?
Yeah.
Can we bring up? I was going to mention it last episode, but I want to bring it up this one. The fits in this movie, the clothes—they're so good.
Yes,
they're so good. And this minute, I guess we missed. She's got the red turtleneck sweater on, but like she has like that coat on over it. The previous minute,
the brown coat. Yeah.
Yep. So cool. And then even Harry with his like tweed jacket and just great fall fits, man.
Yeah, and got the shoulder. He's got the elbow patches on it too.
He's got the elbow. It's one of. I like this movie a lot, but whenever I revisit it, a lot of it is like, man, I love the clothes. In fact, I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but a friend of mine, if you listen to Titanic Minute, White Wine Tom, he bought the he has the white sweater that is worn in Knives Out, and then realized when I rewatched this movie and then saw him wearing that white sweater, I was like, oh, that's the same sweater that Harry wears and when Harry met Sally as well,
the big kind of cable knit thick sweater.
Yes, exact same sweater.
And he stole it from the production?
Well, yeah, no, not yeah. But I just mean it's interesting that you see that same sweater then later on in Knives Out, and I was like, I wonder if Rian Johnson did that on purpose.
Okay, well, first of all, it's really funny that you mention this, because again, on the commentary, Rob Reiner mentions the fact that this is one of the scenes where he's just amazed at the costuming. And I don't remember the name of the woman who does the costuming. Sorry to anyone who cares specifically. But he basically said he's always surprised, like at the Oscars and things like that, that people get awards and nominations, for older types of costumes. He says it's so much more difficult to do contemporary costuming. And he said that she does an amazing job in this movie, because, they create costumes for these characters, in a modern time. And they have to keep using similar types of dress for them, throughout the movie.
That's a good point, because in period pieces, as an uneducated audience member, you're like, oh yeah, those clothes look neat and they look old.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know whether they genuinely match their personalities at all. Correct. Yeah. I never thought about that before.
And with these, these clothes, number one, they like you said, they match the characters. They're, they look good, but they don't look dated, which is incredibly rare for any 80s movie.
Well, you're talking about they don't look dated in 1989, or they don't look dated in 2023?
They don't look dated. They don't look dated now.
Like, right.
We can even have quibbles about personal taste or whatnot, but just think of like any random contemporary 80s movie set in the 80s, and the outfits will almost always, age to some degree, whereas like these outfits still look good.
Right. For sure.
Yeah. Great. It's great. A great fit. I love the clothes in this movie.
Yes. They definitely do a great job of it. And it's not like we're looking at things from the 70s with bell bottoms and stuff like that. As you said, Duff, it does look like something that would still fit today. So I think you're right. I think that is great.
I'm trying to think of just like another kind of like a New York movie in the 80s, and just think
Woody Allen. It could be any of the Woody Allen movies, right?
Yeah. Like,
Anna and Her Sisters.
So yeah, it is. I noticed that in these minutes. I'm like, these outfits look really good.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. They're great.
Yeah, and also it tells us once again. I mean, we know that this is taking place in the fall. So the fact that she's wearing a sweater and he's wearing a tweed jacket, it goes with the theme of the time that this is happening. I mean, one of the things they mentioned on the commentary is that when they filmed the scene in the outdoor cafe with Sally and Marie and Alice, apparently it was freezing on that day. And whenever he would yell cut, the three of them would run over to grab jackets, because they were freezing their butts off the whole time.
Also, you can be hairy, you can have your receding hairline, but as long as you buy clothes that look good and dress nicely, you can have Meg Ryan if you
that's
work
right.
out.
He's missing the pipe for the professor look.
Beard? Can we talk about his beard?
Sure.
Yeah. Billy Crystal's beard here. Now, I know mine doesn't look great right now either, but I'm not in a movie. Like, this looks like they drew a beard onto a child in a middle school.
Right, because he's missing the bottom part under his lip.
Wait, what's going on around his mouth? You're talking about how beautifully Meg Ryan delivers this monologue, and I'm like, and she did it without laughing at Billy Crystal's beard.
I like your little beard,
so
Billy.
I will stick up for it, and that he's in depression mode. This is his depression.
Then it shouldn't be
beard.
So he's only shaving parts because he's in depression mode.
I guess that's true.
So sad. What's it called where you have the beard just right, the little line of the beard under the lip?
Oh,
just a pencil mustache, I guess.
No. I'm talking about underneath, not on top.
Oh,
soul patch.
Yeah, he's got like a little. Yeah. No, the soul patch is on the chin, but I don't know what it's called. But he has like a tiny little bit of hair
I'm looking at
lip.
I'm looking at it now. It is a bizarre choice.
Yeah.
Well, maybe maybe he's like. Still in depression mode, like, I'm gonna try some stuff.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try some stuff, and I'm gonna go out to the bookstore and see what I can pick up there in personal growth.
He was probably on his way to the personal grooming section of the bookstore when he
Because personal grooming is next to personal growth.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go.
Okay. He's that just at sense. The bookstore. He sees her. He's like, oh my God, I wish I would have shaved. That's why he takes a while to walk over to her, because he's like, well, I got to shoot my shot now. It might not come happen again.
He immediately regretted his experimental beard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
But I wonder if through the rest of the movie, it's like, I'm going to have to actually pay attention now for the rest of the movie. You know, if his beard grows in, you know, or if it just stays
a little more, doesn't it later in the movie?
I don't know.
I mean, I've seen, it's been a while since I've seen the whole thing. I'll do a shot breakdown going forward.
I'll jump ahead to something else and see how it looks. No, there he's, you see, I jumped ahead and he's clean shaven. All right. That doesn't help. At some point, he decided that's one of the problems. He keeps changing his look here, you know. Even in 1988-89,
I still maintain that, you know, he's divorced and he's going through stuff. It's like, well, let's see how this looks.
Apparently, GQ in 2019 ranked all the outfits that Harry wears, every single outfit Harry wears, and when Harry met Sally ranked.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I will see if I can find out.
Okay, before you get into that, so I've jumped ahead to minute 48. You know, that's the orgasm scene, and he has a beard there, and he still has that little soul patch under the lip, and it's completely unshaven. Maybe that's just that's how he grows a beard.
So from this point on, like, this is the first time they've seen each other since the initial car ride, right?
No, they saw each other on the airplane.
Okay.
In 1977, they had their car ride. In 1982, they were on an airplane trip together. And you know, now they're in a bookstore cafe.
So from this point on, it's essentially from November through to New Year's Eve. He goes through a lot of facial experimentation in like six to 8 weeks.
No, but the movie takes place over the period of it goes until the following New Year's Eve.
Oh, okay. New Year's. All right. I was going to say, like, he is just wild with his and grows it out very quickly to have that, you know, to go clean shaven and have it come back in by New Year's Eve. But that makes more sense. If it's
I don't think it really takes him that long to grow that beard.
You true. He's a hairy fellow.
He's not Robin Williams, but
I mean,
Okay. I think it falls in. Is he wearing jeans in this scene?
Yes, I believe he is.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm finding the exact. I know. Here it is. Number
two. Yeah, he's wearing jeans and a blue button-down shirt.
Number two. GQ says, all I have to say for this one is look at that sports coat. Look at it with a denim shirt underneath, and he tucked the denim shirt into a lighter wash pair of jeans. It shouldn't work, but it does. Because he brings in a brown belt and tucks in the shirt, and because he understands proportion. Okay, hello, Harry Burns, I see you. Thank you for dialing up the sexy post-divorce with this depressed French literature professor look.
Right. Well, that's what I said. He was missing the pipe in order to get the professor look.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what's number one?
Number one is the white sweater.
The sweater.
Yeah. So, yeah. He's got his signature shoes and pants. He's made a powerful outfit combo out of all of it. Italian chef kiss. There's something about this outfit that makes you want to walk around a park on a crisp fall day with him. I need to date a man who owns a sweater like that. It's an emergency. Number one.
Well, that's
You're
great.
Welcome for that content. Thank you, GQ.
Right. And the last thing I want to talk about in this minute is the fact that she mentioned I Spy. Okay, I'm assuming you guys all are familiar with the game, I guess you could say, I Spy.
Yes, yes.
You know, so it's, first of all, she actually, the way she describes it, she plays it wrong, because you're not supposed to say what you spy. You're supposed to say, like, I spy something blue.
With my little eye, and then you're supposed to guess, right?
No, but you're supposed to give some sort of hint. It's not I spy a lamppost. I spy something green, you know, and then you're supposed to say, oh, it's a lamppost. You know,
right.
I spy something that makes me sad.
So it's a guessing game.
Exactly. Yes. You know, I spy something that makes that makes my uterus jump. You know, the fact that someone has kids. I don't know. You know, there's
all these different. It's a weird way you play I Spy, Rob. But
well, no, that's what Sally was playing, not me.
No, I know. You know, I know.
You know, my uterus doesn't jump.
That'd be kind of confusing if you're playing it with a child.
Let's be clear. I don't think adults sit around and play I Spy.
That's true, also. It's apparently like one of the top ranked games that people can play, you know, on long car rides. Yeah. So maybe Harry and Sally played that on the 18-hour drive.
God, I'm glad that 18 cut if they did.
And if they did, I think every single time Harry would say, "I spy a motel on the side of the road there." Yeah. I spy flashing lights.
I spy a vacancy.
Exactly. I spy a cafe where we can stop. Did any of you know when the game originated?
Oh, the I Spy game? No, yes. I do not.
Okay, so apparently it originated in the early 20th century, but the first time that there's a citation mention of it in any type of literature is in a book from 1946 called The Gypsy's Baby. I don't know what that is, really.
they're of a gypsy.
Apparently. People think that it actually originated sometime during World War II. I guess, you know, things were that boring. So, you know, what do you spy along the way? You know, I spy a little Nazi. I don't know. That's
We did have lots of downtime during our two big wars there. So maybe that's when it came about.
It could be. Could be. So, yeah, that's all I have for the minute. Do any of you guys have anything else for this minute?
No, that's just actual minute, no.
Glad we could talk about the beard, though. Thank you, guys.
You're very welcome. Thank you for bringing that up.
I'm glad we got to talk about Meg Ryan's sweater.
Yes. Yeah. And Billy Crystal's GQ article.
GQ rankings, yeah.
There you go. That's great. All right, so the script is almost word for word. The only there's two very minor discrepancies here. Instead of her saying "not worry about the kids walking in," it says "not worry about the kid walking in," you know. But which it's not a big difference, but it would say something about her, you know, how many kids she wants. You know, the idea by saying she's saying kids, so it's that she wants multiple children, as opposed to just saying kid. You know, meaning that okay, all we wanted was just one kid along the way. You know, that type of thing. It might have just been, you know, it could have just been a flub by Meg Ryan along the way. I mean, apparently she had a lot of trouble in this movie because Billy Crystal kept cracking her up.
Yeah,
a little beard.
No, not because of the little beard, but because of his comedy. But the little beard might have helped too. Yes. And that. And then the other discrepancy is that they switch around the you know, the mailbox and lamppost, because in the script it's lamppost first and then mailbox. But in the movie, it's vice versa. Again, doesn't really make a difference. Doesn't change anything. So it probably just was something that just sounded better to Meg Ryan at the time. So she did it that way. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where my guests will give some sort of adventure story, anecdote, misadventure, something that happened to them along the way of life that's related to either dating or courting. So yesterday we heard from both Joe and Duff. So today we're going to hear from Rob. You have a story for us, Rob?
I wasn't sure where to go on this, but I wanted to just share a story about how it's remarkable that I met someone and somehow still in a relationship. And that was in college is where I met my now wife. And fun fact, age me and also tells you how good I am at things. I think one of our first dates, we went to go see a movie. We went and saw Training Day.
Ooh, okay. So you were dating in 2001. Romantic, there you go.
Yeah, very romantic movie to go to.
Well, it's Valentine's Day, so that's what you should be talking about.
Yeah, go put on Training Day with your beloved. And So I want to tell a story that I know I've told to Joe and Duff before, and they laughed. So I figured I'd you know, play a hit. And that was I don't remember what whoever knows, you know, what arguments come up. But I remember walking around on campus. So this is in college and got in an argument about something. And I still think about this all the time because I am lucky enough to still work on the college campus I went to school at. And so I will walk by this area once or twice a week. And I think about this story all the time. But I was having an argument with her. And, you know, you'll be shocked to hear I felt I was right. And there was like, we're walking on the street and there was like this humanities building. It's kind of like an open air building. And then there's like a, used to be a bridge that would go over where we were at. And it would connect to the different buildings. And there was a field trip of like 7 or 8 year olds. And like a teacher was leading them, and I was leading them across the bridge and over into this open area building where I could see them. And in the middle of the argument, I stopped and I said, "I think you should go up over there." And I pointed to where the children were. And she's like, "Why?" And I was like, "Enjoying the rest of the children."
You shouldn't have said that.
You just said that. But here's the thing that makes me a bad person.
But she's still with you. That's already good.
She's still with me. I also think it's still funny. I think it's a very funny thing to say.
I think it's a savage own. Now, I will say, I doubt that that was productive. I doubt.
Saying it in my head being like, this is funny. And the second I said it and the reaction and the fallout, it was like, that was wrong.
Eight-year-old
me learned a lesson that day.
The dialogue was not enhanced by your contribution.
Yeah, it was well written, though.
So how'd you convince her to stay with you after that?
God, I don't know. She just didn't know better.
Okay.
That's the story I figured I would tell.
Okay. The opposite. Great. Thank you very much for that story. So unfortunately, I know that you guys can't stick around for the rest of the week. So I decided that we're going to do the other two top five segments today. So we'll start with Joe. You know, normally we do this on a Wednesday, but today we're going to do Harry Burns' Hump Day. So Joe, what's your top five Billy Crystal performances? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Yeah, when I got this one, I was like, oh, this will be easy. And this is like another really famous movie star. And I look through their career and I'm like, man, he wasn't in nearly as many good movies as I thought he was. That did make it a little easier. Plus, I was also able to immediately eliminate all of the performances he did in blackface. So that made it easier to rank this as well. And I'll start with number five. I would go with The Princess Bride. It's a small role, but he's pretty funny in it. Because it's such a small role, I wonder if other people usually rank this higher or lower. I'm not sure. But
It's been ranked all over the place. There are people that have ranked it as their number one.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's fine. We're looking for diverse opinions here.
Number four.
It would be really boring if everyone had the same, you know, top five.
Yeah, for sure. Number four was Analyze This, which and with a lot of these movies that I ranked, he's kind of like the straight man in them. But nonetheless, that's a good, solid movie. And he's pretty
funny.
Yeah. And then number three, and this is like the kind of role that I think he's best at, I'd go with Monsters, Inc. I think he just plays like a good, like, best friend.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's great because his best roles are the ones where we don't see him and we just hear him.
Maybe, yeah. And then number two, and this was a movie that I watched a lot growing up. Maybe I shouldn't have, but taped off of TV was Throw Mama from the Train.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, yeah. That is a good one.
That one, actually, I've gone back and forth between ranking that number one or number two, but I have to go with number two. And then I really do think this is his best movie, When Harry Met Sally. I don't he's funny, he's charming, he's but he also doesn't, he's giving it, like, and the minute we talked about today is a good example of that, where he'll let Meg Ryan take over. And I think that you know, sometimes comic actors can kind of have trouble passing the baton to somebody else. But I think that that's maybe one of the biggest strengths of this movie, is that he knows when to take a back seat. So that would be my top five.
All right, great. Thank you very much for that. And because you guys won't be here on Friday for Weekend Romance, but again, today is Valentine's Day, so that's the perfect time for Duff to give his top five romantic comedy movies.
Yeah, so the caveat to this is that I think that for our age range growing up, guys did not see as many romantic comedies. So it's like kind of a gap, because I think it's less of a gendered thing now, but back then it was like, oh, those are chick flicks and I'm not going to see that. So there's probably some heavy hitters that people will be mad at and forgetting. So
nobody will be mad at you, Duff, because this is your list.
Yeah. So, so going from five, I will start off with a movie that I feel like it's fallen a little out of favor, but I still think is great, is High Fidelity, because it is a character arc and a growth journey and just learning not to be an immature man child and okay. all that comes along with that. I've labeled on my
screen. Here, jumping up on the number two.
Moonstruck.
Yes.
Because everyone in that movie is just super charming. I rank that a little lower just because, like, the Nicolas Cage angle is kind of wild and out there, and I don't...
What Nicolas Cage movies are not?
Yeah.
I always say that my favorite Nicolas Cage movie is Leaving Las Vegas, because he dies in it.
Yeah, yeah, that he does. So number three, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Yep.
Number two, Roman Holiday, which is
excellent.
I only kept out of the number one spot because spoiler, but you know they don't actually end up together.
Right,
they can't be together.
So like Casablanca, one, you know.
Yeah.
Something that's recurring in this movie a little bit.
So number one is something that I kind of think, like, oddly is super famous and loved, but also not thought of as a romantic comedy, is Groundhog Day.
Okay.
Oh. Sure.
But very much at its core is a romantic comedy.
Yeah, and for sure.
You know, so, yeah, that's, I mean, I, you know, I don't think there's anyone, well, except for maybe Rob's wife. Isn't she a Groundhog Day hater?
She doesn't like when things repeat in movies. Doesn't like Groundhog Day because
sounds pretty childish to me.
Yeah, yeah, go join the rest of the
I think you should send her over to be with all the kids on the other side.
Yeah,
I do love that logic. But you know, Groundhog Day, everyone talks about fairly Bill Murray. I think it's his best performance by far. But Andy McDowell is just great in that movie.
I don't think anyone's going to be mad about that list, stuff. That's a good.
No, one. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, you know, because there's so many. You know, like I didn't. Like all the big ones, like there's no Julia Roberts in my list. There's no Meg Ryan. There's no like J Lo or you know people who make.
There doesn't have to be.
No, I'm just saying.
Was this on? Like, did you think about this movie on your list at all?
What movie?
When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, sorry. Well, I just.
Duff Titanic. Titanic.
Well, Titanic's not funny.
There are parts of it that are.
When Harry Met Sally would be, I think I just haven't watched it as many times as some of these, but I could see When Harry Met Sally sneaking in there.
Yeah, I was just curious.
I'm surprised you didn't put You've Got Mail on there, you know.
Harry Met Sally's better than You've Got Mail.
Yeah, that's better. I mean,
that's true.
As we've talked about, like, Tom Hanks is just kind of in, like, bloated castaway, I need to get your code.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Also, like, it's not gaslighting, but, like, the whole manipulation angle of You've Got Mail is still unsettling to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's still an enjoyable movie, but for, like, the last third of it, like, Tom Hanks has an unfair advantage.
Yeah. Well, Tom Hanks always has an unfair advantage, you know. It's just the type of actor that he is.
Yeah.
All right. So since you guys won't be able to join me for the rest of the week, or and also, do you have anything else you want to say about the movie in general?
I really like this movie. I don't think I've seen it a ton of times. Whenever I do watch it, I really enjoyed it. I rewatched it like a week or two ago. I think it really works. I think it flows really nice. I think the end with Harry at the New Year's party and everything, like, it's a hell of a monologue, and it works every time on me. So I understand how it would work on Sally as well. Yeah. Right. They don't make them like this anymore.
No.
Yeah.
No. They definitely don't. Definitely don't. Any other thoughts from you guys?
Thanks for having us on.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for finding time to be on. This was great. I had a lot of fun yesterday and today. Hopefully you guys did too.
Had a blast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was waiting for that response. You guys paused a little too long there. Yeah. I was like, uh-oh. all right. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with the Midnight Boys?
Yeah, I mentioned a free podcast. We have that, but more famously in the minute-by-minute world, I guess, we did Titanic Minute. You go to just look up Titanic Minute. It's what you think it is. We talk about the movie Titanic 1 minute at a time. It's 195 episodes. So jump in. People seem to get through that show somehow, which is remarkable.
Because it's done so well, in my opinion.
Thank you.
I'm a little biased, but still, because I've already listened to it. The problem with the movies-by-minute format is you probably aren't going to go back and listen again to the show, even if you've enjoyed it a lot, because it's definitely
a lot of content.
It's a lot of not just it's a lot of content, it's also a lot of time to you want to spend that on a different movie that you can listen to another 195 minute movie, which All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So thanks a lot, guys. This was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, you guys can't make it for the rest of the week. So tomorrow I will be back with a different guest. But until then, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
With all your faults, I love you still, it had to be you, wonderful you, had to be you.